I'm Jonathan Capehart, in today for Leonard Lopate. This next interview is going to be so much fun. Just let me get through this, and then we can go. Drag queens and kings have had a long, hilarious, and important history here in New York City. And on this week's Please Explain, we're looking at drag as an art form, a political statement, and as popular entertainment. Joining us now are two legendary performers, Lady Bunny, a comedian, singer, DJ, and founder of Woodstock. Woodstock.
Lord, I'm not that old.
Yes, you are.
Wigstock. Wigstock. And renowned entertainer Murray Hill, also known as the hardest working middle-aged man in show business. We're also joined here in studio by Joe Jeffries, the organizer of Drag Show Video Verite, which collects and presents archival video from New York's illustrious drag past. And I'm, as you know, so pleased to welcome all three of them to the Leonard Lopate Show today. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Lady Bunny, I'm so sorry for messing that up.
Oh, that's okay.
Wigstock.
I wish I'd created Woodstock. I'd be rich.
And I forgot to mention, if you have any questions about drag, give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Talking about RuPaul, and RuPaul, who said, "You're born naked and the rest is drag." Bunny, do you agree that we're all, to some extent, drag performers in our everyday lives?
Well, you are wearing a suit and tie because you want to convey an image of professionalism. So to an extent, that's your work drag. That's your, you know, I'm to be respected look.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I mean, if you wear a construction hat to your job, then in a sense that's construction drag. You know, Rue has a lot of sayings, and I've heard all of them, being his roommate from Atlanta, Georgia, and here. So, yeah, that's just one of his sayings that just says we all put on, we all create who we are using accoutrements or haircuts or tattoos.
Or ties, as I have on a tie. Murray, is there really a right way to do drag?
Well,
he has found it.
Are we getting to that point already?
I've got questions about that, so go on.
I just want to say, I know it's a radio show, but I look more of a man than Lady Bunny does right now. So I just
I confer.
Or more
I
of
second
a,
that.
A woman. Oh, I don't know. But no, there's no right way to do drag. I mean, when I started, I used to wear these horrible, oversized polyester suits. And I look like, you know, Benny Hill.
Yeah.
You still wear them, but they're tight now.
Yeah, I'm the only guy in show business that can't fit into my own custom-made suits.
So there is no right way to
Well,
do drag.
The great thing about drag and the queer community is that, you know, we've always been on the fringe. We make up our own rules.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we don't prescribe to, oh, like, for example, as Bunny said, you have this very nice, probably men's warehouse suit on with a nice little pocket square, because you have to wear that because you're working at NPR. But we could just do whatever we want because we don't have to go to an office. We go to a nightclub.
Men's warehouse. We're talking after the show. Go ahead, lady.
Well, there is. There are different schools of drag that think you need to do this way. Like if your shoulders, there's the pageant drag, which are very polished, you know, custom made jewelry. And they're like, if your shoulders are this broad, then you need to cinch your waist in this much with a girdle and you need to pad out this much to balance your broad shoulders if your goal is to look passable as a woman. So there are very stringent, you know, rules within certain communities, but then there's other drag queens that barely even shave or San Francisco drag that dress as nuns in basically clown makeup, like the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Right, not beards, you know. So there's all kinds, but within certain communities there are guidelines, and I've noticed that since the advent of RuPaul's Drag Race and YouTube, since a lot of the drag is geared towards, you know, beauty and passing as a woman, and a lot of these queens have done incredible YouTube makeup tutorials where they're like excelling, like makeup in contouring and shading. I mean, their nose has been transformed to a totally different race. So, I mean, they have grown up thinking, you know, there is one way to do drag, and it is this, and it's what they see on Drag Race because that's their main exposure. exposure. Some are too young to even go in clubs or see performers like Murray.
Well, I think the question gets back to, is there a right way to be a man or a woman? Not is there a right way to do drag, but to be a human being, to be a man or a woman, is there a right way to do that?
Well, I mean, I've only done drag one time. It was almost 20 years ago.
As a man or a woman?
Well, I'm about to tell you. So I borrowed a friend's dress, you know, cute red cocktail dress, and I got to the party. It was mandatory. Guys had to be in drag. And I got there, and the host of the party looked at me, beautiful in drag, looked at me and said, "You make a very cute lesbian," which... Yeah, it's not what I was going for. I was going for Lady Bunny, RuPaul. That's not what I guess I did drag my own way.
Well, the trick to looking like Lady Bunny is to eat.
and the hair, the abundance of hair. Joe, how far back does gender bending performance go in New York? Are we talking the Dutch settlement?
The Dutch, yeah. Just in the history of humanity, goes back to the cavemen. As soon as anybody puts on the first fur pelt and they decide that you can wear it this way or that way and start distinguishing gender, it goes back to the cavemen. But yeah, New York is definitely going back to the Dutch. The first governor of New York, Cornwall, was politically smeared for being a supposed cross-dresser.
Huh. Did you know that?
Of course I did.
But you weren't there.
Are you trying to say I was there? And
you were there, right? Buddy, you said you know Cornwall.
You have a couple of fur pelts, don't you?
Yes, I was also there playing the women's roles in Shakespearean England.
There you go.
Murray, how long have you been in entertainment? Where do you draw your inspiration from?
Well, I started in 1996, but... Bunny, I don't know if you remember this, but I was in college and I was photographing drag queens when I was at Boston University. And I photographed Lip Synca and Lady Bunny. This is like 94. So I was already getting inspired by the drag queens. And then when I got to New York, I realized that there was nothing on the other side of that. So I hate to, you know, blow up her ego any more than it is taking up this entire room. But Lady Bunny is actually one of the first drag influences that I had. And then I got really
Don't blame me, honey.
It's not her fault.
But, I know from following you for a while and also things that I've read that Don Rickles, someone who's an inspiration. What is it about Don Rickles? Which I know the younger people have no idea who this person is,
but
he's
still
hilarious.
Alive. He's still alive. Shecky Green is still alive. And I think, you know, those kind of comedians, they didn't. Like, they weren't a stand-up and punchline kind of comics. They really worked the entire room. There was, like, a nice flow between the audience and the comedian. So it just felt like you were hanging out with your uncle telling jokes. And that's kind of how my act is. It's very loose. I sing. I tell jokes. I tap dance pretty badly. So it definitely has an old-school feel. But then at the end of the day, I'm, you know, Murray Hill. Showbiz.
But your character is somewhat of a schmaltzy, you know, like low-budget, classic comedian like Shecky Green.
Right, up in the Catskills.
Definitely references that period.
And as bawdy as Don Rickles.
Yeah, I'm not as hardcore as he is. I'm a little more friendly, like, you know, Benny Hill a little bit, Dame Edna style.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of us are bawdy because we work in clubs, and when your audience is drunk and it's 1 a.m., they don't want to see a Laura Ashley Bonnet yodeling for Jesus. Although, actually, that's not a bad
sounds
idea.
Good. That's a good act. Let's see that.
Can we do a duet to that?
So, Lady Bunny, how did Lady Bunny come into existence?
I moved to Atlanta, and there was a lot of drag, and it was very serious lip sync to Melissa Manchester and Bette Midler and Diana Ross in butterfly sequin tops. And RuPaul and I were roommates, both very poor, you know, like artsy fartsy, getting rags from thrift stores. And I, you know, we were kind of a reaction against the polished drag. And ours was, we were also inspired by the B-52s, mm-hmm. who were from nearby Athens, who had a retro 60s look, which I have still kept well into my 60s. Shut up, Murray. So
in your 60s?
No.
Okay, I'll let that slide. Sorry.
So then, you know.
You had me.
Yeah, no, that was my influence. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm influenced by big hair and the looks of the late 60s, mm-hmm. and I used to imagine that I resembled Barbara Eden, but lately it's more like Barbara Ben Eden too much.
Do you have a rim shot that we can put in there?
I'll do it myself. I'm Jonathan Capehart, in for Leonard Lopate, speaking with Lady Bunny, Murray Hill, and Joe Jeffries, who's a drag historian. Can you tell where do these two lively characters fit in the history of drag?
Do they fit? They've made the history of drag. They've made their own way and their own story into this. I mean, popular entertainers, spokespeople for the community. They've made their own niche into this material.
Craigslist regulars.
Craigslist regulars. Okay.
No, that's you. I'm on christianmingle.com.
All right, so Bunny, we've got a question, actually. Okay. Maud in Windsor Terrace posed a question for you on our website. One, how do you put on eyelashes without getting them bloodshot? Getting your eyes bloodshot. She says, her eyes get so irritated and bloodshot when I glue on lashes. Even with Visine, I know it's mostly practice, but just curious if she has any tips. And do you make your own wigs? They're magnificent.
Thank
this
you.
This is from Maud in Windsor Terrace.
Thank you. I don't make my own. You know, I'm actually a tomboy who can't sew or do wigs. But I'll tell you about the lashes. Here's an easy tip. You put the adhesive on and you let them sit for a few minutes so that the adhesive isn't so wet like it is when it comes out of the tube. It develops a little tack. When it is a bit sticky, it's not going to move all over. You never want to put the adhesive to where it's wet and goes onto the eyeball. You let it develop a little bit of tack, let it sit for 2 minutes or so, then you put it on, never touching the eyeball. So you're going to have a lot better luck. And it took me a long time to learn that. And speaking of drag history, Ethel Eichelberger taught me that in the basement of the Pyramid Club.
In the basement of the Pyramid, yeah.
She put on theatrical shows that were well reviewed by the New York Times. She was a big deal in the 80s drag scene of New York.
Did the great women of history, literature, and myth, Clytemnestra, Jocasta, Catherine was great. These kind of poetic one-person shows with accordion-accompanied songs. Bunny was in some of those shows. You were in Casanova, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I was in a few. Yeah. Mrs. Wiggs.
Yeah, Mrs. Wiggs.
It was very classy.
Yeah.
Joe,
low class, high class.
At the beginning of our conversation, Lady Bunny was talking about the different types of drag, depending on where you are in San Francisco, nuns in drag. Stephen, our producer, was talking about the drag queens in Brooklyn who have beards, which is, for me, I mean, drag queens for me are Lady Bunny and RuPaul. What has the evolution looked like over the decades? I mean, are we seeing a proliferation of different types of drag, or are we just paying attention to different parts of drag that have always been there?
They've always been there. They've just become defined in different ways, and we are now paying more attention to different parts and seeing different parts. Drag, for me, I always think of it as a very localized form, with the exception of RuPaul and what RuPaul has done to put it in the media and out there is kind of a homogenized form. It's very localized to the bars in any one particular community. So, yes, San Francisco has a different look than New York, but even New York has different looks within itself. There is kind of the Manhattan West Village look versus what used to be the East Village look, which, you know, is now, I think, over in Williamsburg and Bushwig. I always call it Bushwig. I can't get Bushwig out of my mouth anymore.
Well, they do a festival called Bushwig of drag queens.
Yeah.
Well, that's what
there.
Stephen was saying, that exactly what you just said, the East Village has moved over to Brooklyn.
Well, at least aesthetically, yes. I think that style of drag has now moved.
Well, the kids in Bushwick now, like Mary Cherry, for example, she's a big producer and performer there. I think they're actually reacting to the RuPaul style of drag, and they're taking it back, and they're just being, they have beards, they have goatees, they look like hot messes, but on purpose. Like when Bunny's out late at night, she looks like a hot mess because she is a hot mess, but these kids are actually doing it as a reaction to like the polished drag. So it seems to me when I'm hanging out with the kids that are 20 years younger than me in Bushwick is that it's not even just about being in drag. There is like gender variance all over the place. They're playing with gender and costuming and makeup in a very different way.
Which is really refreshing because it takes all kinds, and not everyone should, lip sync
to the lies.
40. Yeah, top 40 artists. I mean, it's funny because I see drag queens lip syncing more and more to top 40 songs. When I was growing up, drag queens actually taught me incredible music, like that they would lip sync to, like Melba Moore's Lean on Me. That was never on the radio, or not any radio this station that I knew of, or Patti LaBelle's sensational Over the Rainbow. I mean, it was the queen's role to introduce us to Grace Slick's solo material that we would not ordinarily knew. Now the queens have become a bit like DJs, a jukebox for kids that really just want to see Beyonce, Rihanna, and just the most played out. To me, that's very boring, and that is kind of what's taken over. And I'm really glad people in Bushwick are doing different things, because we need to have a variety.
I'm speaking with drag performers Lady Bunny and Murray Hill and drag historian Joe Jeffries about what goes into a drag show for this week's Please Explain. And if you have a question, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692. Leave a comment on our show page or find us on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We will be right back with more after a break.
As the gentleman told you, my name is Turlur Lipschitz, and we do want you just to relax and let your hair down and have a gay time with us. I'm quite sure you know your reputations were shot to hell the minute you came in this joint. You're all under suspicion. So now that you're here, relax and enjoy it, or we'll lock the doors and make you one of us. Or just make you. I think that's what the hell you all need. I'm not sure. You know what they say, if you can't lick them, join them.
I'm Jonathan Capehart in today for Leonard Lopate, and we are in the Please Explain segment of the show, and it's Please Explain Drag. The person you were just listening to is a drag performer named Ty Bennett. And Joe, tell us about Ty Bennett.
Ty Bennett was a drag performer, toured the United States and the world, is mainly known for working in New York City at the 82 Club, which was a club at 82 East 4th Street, just down from La Mama, from the late 50s till the mid-70s. Ty was the MC there, kind of did a Sophie Tucker act.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, actually, speaking of the 82 Club, we have someone on the line. We're going to put them on, who used to be a showgirl at the famous 82 Club.
Hey,
are you there?
This?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call. And yes, I did work at the 82 Club and with Ty Bennett and, of course, with Kip Russell, who was the producer-director.
Wow.
Hi. What was your name as a performer there?
My name is Diosa Felix. I was a showgirl. I worked with Kim August. Also, what most people don't realize, that when you worked at the 82 Club, the costumes were made by costumers who did Broadway shows. I mean, you know, you go for fittings for muslins, and then you go for the second fitting and the third fitting. Every show was, one of them was called Fireworks. Another one was Les Girls, which was quite long and extensive, and we had three shows a night. And most importantly, Ty Bennett was sat two seats away from me. So she was wonderful and very generous and very kind to anyone who was new there. And I had a wonderful time. And I still keep, a matter of fact, I still have my first showgirl costume that I still have when I first started at the 82 Club.
Wow.
And what most people don't seem to realize is that when you had to work at the 82 Club, it was unionized, musicians from 802. The club was 82 on 82 East 4th Street. I worked with Kit Russell, Hans Christel, Ursa.
Did you work with Adrian?
Excuse me?
Adrian? Did you work with Adrian, the Salome dancer?
Adrian was before my time. I started in 65 through 1970,
okay.
The summer of 1970. But I had a wonderful time. It was a wonderful experience. And I must tell you, if ever anyone goes to the Google and brings up a female impersonator 82 Club, you'll see all the people that I'm speaking about.
That is terrific.
So it was a wonderful experience, but I wanted to make the point that at that time, in order for you to work in a nightclub, especially that served alcohol, you had to have what was known as a cabaret license, and that license was fingerprinting and photographed by the police department. And if you're wondering why people like Frank Sinatra and Billie Holiday couldn't work in a nightclub that served alcohol, is because you couldn't have any kind of some sort of felony of any kind, whether it be drugs or guns, as Frank Sinatra did in Vegas.
So yeah. I'm glad they don't have that role now. I could work.
Yes, that's very true.
Diaz,
I'm sorry.
Thank you very much for your call. I want to get to a question that we have for Murray Hill, which is, let me see if I can work this thing. Do I have this here? Joseph from Brooklyn, you have a question for Murray Hill.
Hi, yes. Thank you so much for taking my call. Murray, I'm a big fan of yours. I'm a big fan of all drag. But my question is that it seems to me that being a drag king is in some ways more challenging than being a drag queen. There's less of them. It's less of a sort of a glamorous, sort of glitzy, high gloss kind of thing, and it relies a lot more on personality than look, although look is certainly part of it. So my question ultimately is, what is the challenge of being a drag king in a community where drag queens are in the majority, and what do you think people have to do in order to make it and get as successful as someone like you?
That's a great question, Joseph. Thank you.
Thank you, Joseph, and shout out to Brooklyn, of course. You know, there's just not as many drag kings as part of history, which Joe can tell. There's, like, not many at all. And as far as drag queens, it's a huge part of culture since the fur pelts. So, you know, I think for when I started in the 90s, there was a group of drag kings in New York at Club Casanova, and there was, like, 10 people. And it ran for, like, 2 years, but then I think people... they got tired of it because it was so much work to, like, get the press, to get the attention, because there isn't the same economic support as drag queens. There's not the same visibility in culture. So it was a hard thing. And for me, I decided, you know, after I ran for mayor of New York, that it was going to become a career. So I just really put everything into it. It was not even so much about drag kings, but I'm going to do this full time. And I've been working on it. I don't know, how many years has it been? 18?
Too many.
Too many. I'm still 20 years younger than you, kid. But it does take a lot more work because there's no frame of reference for people. I mean, everyone's always like, why isn't there a drag king version of RuPaul's, you know, Drag Race? And it's like, you know, I've talked to local people and they just don't, there's nothing that they can compare it to. So it's like something that's scary to them.
You know, Heather, go ahead.
I think that it's interesting. I mean, it may be more work to get a name as a drag king, and that may be why there are so few of them, but there's also fewer lesbian venues that might support them, and there's lots of gay bars that would support. But I think as far as in terms of the amount of work, there's a lot more physical work and costuming with drag queens, because drag kings dress down and cut their hair off and maybe put on, you know, facial hair and no makeup. We're wearing, like, ridiculous makeup and, you know, binding the body. And I mean, you might bind, you know, a drag king might bind their
I wear Spanx.
Blouses.
I bind.
You wear Spanx.
Right, but I mean, you know, like the heels and, you know, the very men's clothes are limited. I mean, a man can wear a tuxedo or look, right. For a formal event, a man can wear what? One thing, a tux. A woman can wear any color from sapphire to peach, sequins, chiffon. So, I mean, it's a drag. You're adding a lot more. You're adding big wigs. Drag king, by definition, is kind of dressing down and getting rid of all the things that a real woman...
Well, Bunny makes a good point, because, you know, what I loved when I started seeing Bunny in the 90s in Boston was there was such an element of camp. And I loved it. Mm-hmm. And I love that kind of humor. I love Bunny's humor. You know, I love it. It's not a threatening humor. It's like an inside joke, but then it's also making comments about society at large. So when I went, you know, and started doing drag king, there was no camp, no humor. It was like very, what Bunny said, it's like people wore dark suits. They tried to pass, like nobody smiled. And these were these lesbian clubs in the West Village. So I wanted to bring what the drag queens did into my act, which was humor, camp. Mm-hmm. So I do spend less time on my outfit, but more time on the writing and the material and camp in this community.
Speaking of you know, costumes, how long does it take you, Lady Bunny, to get ready from beginning to end? We're talking hours.
I'd say about an hour, 45 minutes.
An hour and 45 minutes?
It depends if you put the nails on and everything. I mean, you know, if you're going to a premiere, you're going to take a little bit more time with your hair and makeup.
And Murray?
I would say it takes me like half an hour.
All right.
Because, I mean, I put the pomade
to shave.
In. No, that only takes 2 minutes because I only have one hair.
Well, as you can tell, I'm speaking with Lady Bunny and Murray Hill and drag historian Joe Jeffries here on the Leonard LoPate Show. Okay. What's the best FCC-friendly name you've heard, drag name you've heard, and the worst?
and, I don't think we can say anything.
Okay, we got our answer.
Well, let's. Well,
Mary Cherry's a good name. I think FCC friendly.
I think suppository spelling is PC. She's from San Francisco.
Here, write it down, and I'll see if I can figure out a way to say it.
Well, that's the only one that I.
No, one of the things, one of the legends is that the great way to get a drag name is to take the name of your first pet and combine it with the name of the address where you grew up. Is that corny, or is there a really great way to come up with a drag name?
It's a method for sure. Lip Sync is a great drag name because that's exactly what Lip Sync does and excels at, is lip syncing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's corny. It's a little bit of a cop out. It leaves it to chance. I mean, if you're just doing drag once on, for Halloween, then that may be a good idea. But if you really want to represent, you know, something like, as you said, lip syncs, then you're going to choose a name which represents what you do or gives some sense of what your flavor as a performer or personality is.
Sister Boom Boom, one of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. That's a great name, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We got two great questions that have come in. Heather in New York asks, can drag queens be straight? And then another listener asked about makeup, why drag queens' faces don't break out all the time because of the makeup. So the first one, can drag queens be straight?
Sure.
Absolutely.
They're mainly called cross-dressers, and, you know, there's a culture of straight men who like to dress as women, and they do it, I think, for sexual pleasure. There's actually a weekend in Provincetown in the fall after their season where these guys come with their wives. Some of them have a fetish to dress as very young women, like as in pinafores and baby Janes and bows in their hair, and they're wistfully window shopping in October with the wives by their sides that are half their size.
The sissy drag.
It's sissy drag, or I mean, you know, I maybe they just do it in lingerie, and you only see a picture of it on their Craigslist ad, you know. But it does happen.
Performers, I mean, entertainers, because I always separate performers drag from cross dressers.
Yes,
right? And drag performers can definitely be straight, gay, anything.
Well, Dame Edna is straight,
right?
Oh, that's
Tyler
right.
Perry.
Maybe.
Julian Elton's, right? Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's entirely possible.
And what about the question about the makeup? Why don't drag queens' faces break out all the time? I mean, we're talking just
extra they're not
hair.
Looking close enough, I think. I mean, we're on a radio show, so you can't
get
see
closer.
Buddy's face.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have sensitive skin. I don't know makeup to break your skin out if you don't cleanse your face. I mean,
maybe
if you
haven't found the
have
right
a
brand.
Wild night and pass out, and you might break out. But you know, I think if you remove it, I mean, I think most makeups are. I mean, if you're allergic to a certain product, then you'll break out.
That was Lady Bunny you were just listening to. We're also here with Murray Hill and drag historian Joe Jeffries. We can't get out of this conversation without talking about, a little more specifically, that there is a difference between drag performers and trans people. And why do you think people confuse the two?
They see the dress or the pair of pants and they're confused. They don't understand the underlying differences and intention. I hate that word intention, but there it goes.
Well, I think it's because America's just not very hip to this new kind of taboo thing. I mean, Chaz Bono's brought it out into the open that you would not just be wearing the clothes of an opposite sex to do a job, but that you actually feel that you were born into the wrong body. So that's very difficult for straight people, you know, who've never had to think, they think I'm straight, I'm a man and I like to sleep with women. The gay people have had to think I'm a man, but wait, I like to sleep with men. So then trans people are, I'm a man, but I feel like I'm a woman and actually want to have my genitals removed. So it's not like a part-time dressing as a woman. It's like a transition towards being a woman with surgery.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a game or a career.
Now let's get into vocabulary, because there's been a lot of controversy surrounding the use of the words
quote, tranny and she-male on RuPaul's Drag Race. So why do you think we've had this contentious of a debate about language now? I have my theories, but I wonder if you have any thoughts.
Well, it's definitely a hot topic in our community. Mm-hmm. And Bunny and I were talking about it in the green room. And it seems to me that it's like the more visibility the community has received, the more divisive we become. And it's like almost a micromanagement of identity politics. And for me, it's like I'm definitely in a different generation. We didn't have any of these terms. Like people are like, how do you identify? And it's like, well, I identify as Murray. I didn't have trans man or trans tranny or none of those words were. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know about them. So now I think a lot of these younger people haven't experienced the kind of lack of visibility, community, all those things that when I was a kid. And now it seems like it's gone completely out of control and we're attacking our own people.
And creating transphobia. And there's a very militant trans community. I mean, Neil Patrick Harris just opened as Hedwig. Mm-hmm. That's the story. His angry inch is a botched sex change that's left him with a small male genitalia. Now, that is not a typical post-operative transsexual experience. However, it's an entertaining and dark and intelligent musical. Trans people should not be able to ban words that offend them and stifle John Cameron Mitchell, who created Hedwig's creativity, or RuPaul's creativity. Mm-hmm. And whether you are choosing to be gay or come out of the closet and be openly gay, or a drag king, or a drag queen, or someone who's straight with facial tattoos, if any journey you choose that's different, a trans person, you're going to take some flack in the streets. But do you have a sense of purpose? Then you've got to ignore that flack and say, this is who I am, like it or lump it. And you can ban words, but you can't ban intent. And if you ban the words, that just causes the hatred of you mm-hmm. to go underground. I'd rather see my enemies and know who they are, then I can know how to fight them.
And let's end on an up note. That was a great. I appreciate what you had to say on that. And I want to hear from all three of you real quickly. What's the most important thing a drag queen or drag king needs to have to be successful? Is it the costume? Is it the hair? Is it the body? Is it the voice? Or is it something else? Or a combination of all those things? What do you think, Lady Bunny? Quickly.
I think it has to be something unique. I mean, if there are 40 queens in every city lip-syncing to Beyoncé, no one's going to fly you to another city where they're already doing that in 40 mm-hmm. queens in that city.
Murray Hill?
Definitely originality and, like, working on your craft.
Joe Jeffries, you've been watching.
It has to be entertaining in some way, and that can be tied into this uniqueness. But, yeah, entertaining.
This has been great fun. I've been speaking with Murray Hill. He's performing in New York Thursday nights at the Jazz Room in the General on 199 Bowery, and with Lady Bunny, who has a new show called Clown Syndrome at La Esquilita every Thursday through
Tuesday,
the end of May.
Tuesday.
Every Tuesday. Every Tuesday through the end of May. And with Joe Jeffries, a drag historian and operator of drag show Video Verite. Thank you all so much
for
being
here.
Thank you, showbiz.